flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
So excited for all of you joining us for another wonderful episode of the world's only Mad Men podcast. Mad Men, a show about how in the 1960s, women discovered masturbation. Buzz, 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 buzz. That's what it's about. Please give us 5 stars and a review on all of the podcast platforms. We actually got a new review, Vince.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Someone wrote in with this.
I hope it's a good one.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're not all good reviews, but I thought this one was, it was like constructive criticism. I'll play it for you. There's audio. Here it is. Vince Mancini's
been a bitch lately. Anyone else notice that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe do something about that, man.
People do say that.
People do be saying that you've been a bitch lately. I don't know why they would say such a thing. I think you've been great.
You know, I've had some trouble at home.
What kind of trouble? Traveling salesman?
Oh, yeah, I had a traveling salesman. Came into my house and my wife got mad.
My wife.
She said, "Why would you do that?"
And you were like, "Because I was trying to fuck."
Yeah, it's trying to make you jealous. Duh.
Yeah. Well, hey, ladies and gentlemen, do not send more mean messages like that about Vince. Vince is trying really hard and he's going through a hard time because he just wants his wife to love him. 5 stars in review. Okay. Today, we're going to be talking about from season 1 of Mad Men, episode 11, Indian Summer. And our guest is a returning Pod Yourself champion. You have heard her talk about The Wire and other shows that we've done. We've done so many shows. She is a stand-up comic, and her debut album, Ice Cream Money, is out now. NPR named it one of the best albums of the year. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome back to the pod, Ashley Ray.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here.
So happy to have you back. How have you been?
You know, good, busy. It's been a year. Haven't we all just had a year?
Oh, we've had a year. What a year we've had. So many ups, so many downs.
Downs, you know, it was a year and it happened.
Yeah, and it's gone forever. And the good thing about every year is that it resets, your mind resets January 1st, so nothing bad happened. No trauma exists. You start fresh.
I'm still writing 2023 on all my checks.
Oh, boy. Oh boy, look at you getting old. 2023. I remember that feeling in 1991. Is that a weird thing? I remember distinctly.
Wrote a lot of checks that year.
I wrote a lot of checks. I was a really busy baby. Yeah, no, I remember like having a lot of trouble because I had just learned to write the date and I was writing 1990 on things that said it was supposed to say 1991. Mm. And I was just like, this is fucking bullshit. How am I supposed to remember this? I just got used to 1990.
But yeah, and they expect you to do this every year. To remember.
Every year. It's bullshit. Just make it the same year. Dog. You know what I mean? Anyways, Ashley Ray, this is a Mad Men podcast, and I want to ask you, what's your favorite advertisement?
Ooh, I love any advertisement that makes my mom lose her mind. If it makes parents and old people laugh, I am like, that is a good commercial. I think my favorite is a classic, the Orbitz gum, you lint liquor, when they like have to clean their, and so they don't swear. I still quote that. That is so, that's classic commercial.
Interesting. I don't think I fully remember that one. It was like, it was no swearing. That's how that's
it's
was
like, yeah,
the
it's
bit.
Like it's like Orbit gum. It's so clean. It cleans your mouth out. And it's like these two women are fighting over like a man they're both sleeping with. And she's like, you lint liquor.
Damn. What do you think the swear was there? Was it dick liquor? Probably.
I think it. Yeah, probably dick sucker. Or like, I'm honestly shocked you don't know this one. She's like, and she's, the other girl's like, you cootie queen. It's okay.
Oh shit, okay, that's kind of a swear.
I'm a big like, fan of like insults that sound like swears that aren't swears, or like things that sound like racial slurs but aren't racial slurs.
Yeah.
Like I was listening to Christmas music the other day. One of my favorites is Jingle Horse, where he like calls him a Jingle Horse. I'm like, that
giddy up
sounds
Jingle
like
Horse.
That, such a racial slur for a reindeer. Like,
yes.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good. My and mom will say great big butterballs. Like, instead of goddamn, she'll be like, great big butterballs. I can't believe this. And I'm like, that sounds so much dirtier.
it's
more visual.
Moist,
you can't like
testicles.
Avoid the visual.
Yeah.
That's right. The Orbitz gum, that was those commercials where the lady with the white teeth, and she would smile and say, Orbitz gum, it makes your mouth clean. Was it that?
Oh, no. I remember those, but this was, it's like, it was a whole thing where people would be like, oh, it's so clean, I can't swear. They'd be like, who are you calling a cootie queen, you lint liquor? And
I love it.
And it was, it's... you're gonna I'll send you a link.
Yeah, send me a link.
This is, I feel like it's one of the most famous commercials of all time.
For some reason I've blocked it out in my mind. It could have happened at the time when in the Leap family we didn't have television for a few years, and then 9/11 happened and we got the TVs back.
It definitely came out when I was in high school, so it was probably like 2007,
so it was post 9/11.
A bit past 9/11, a little.
Well, I should know it. Post 9/11 commercials were my thing. Ashley, you've seen Mad Men before. Do you like Mad Men?
Oh yeah, I love Mad Men.
Hell
I
yeah.
was so happy when I saw you were going to talk Mad Men. I'm obsessed with it. I watched it when it was on. I went into advertising when I was in college because I loved Mad Men so much. I watched it and I was like, that seems so easy. I could do that. Seems like a great way to drink during the day and make money.
Yes.
I worked at the ad agency that Mad Men is based on, Ogilvy.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's had a big impact on my life.
Clearly, that's wild. I had a similar thing with The Wire where it made me want to be a cop. Because I was like, it seems like all they do is drink, and I'm pretty sure I could just steal the drugs. But I was too high to.
I was truly like, if they can do this job being so racist and drunk, I think I could just nail this.
Are we talking cop or ad men, or is it the same job? Both are equally evil. So I don't know if you guys have noticed, and maybe it's just like Twitter's updated their algorithm or something, because I still go on Twitter. Have you guys noticed?
Don't.
I know.
Stop
I should,
it.
I know I should stop. I can't help it. I go on there, and maybe the blue sky people, if you guys are blue sky people, you can tell me if it's
on that too. It's
replaced. I mean, it feels like Twitter from 4 years
ago. It feels like Twitter.
Ago.
Yeah, it's just a lot of like, hey, doggos, I have a cat feed because I can't deal with the world. It's a lot of that, and funny people are coming, and it's slowly getting better.
It is
but
getting
it's
better.
Just, it's not there yet, okay? The Luigi jokes weren't as good over there.
I know.
Just... Really? I don't know. I feel like Twitter's fast becoming the new Facebook, where it's just like
that's true.
Tumbleweeds and like,
and I hate to say it, but the latest school shooting in Madison, Wisconsin, I think was the greatest test, because on Twitter it was just all misinformation, nothing correct. You couldn't believe a word of it. And on Blue Sky, it was hilarious jokes about how the first mass fem cell shooter did not know how to use Google Sheets and forgot to set her manifesto to public, which was funny.
I saw that and I was like, that's very
just
funny.
Our first woman in a real dominated field, and she come on girly. I know the misogynist mass shooters are making fun of her and how
damn
they,
she's like
they
it's like the Peggy of school shooters. But I will say, just, you know, I've been on both platforms, but I've noticed on Twitter a lot of Mad Men discourse has been happening.
Yes. Oh.
There's, I don't know what's going on, if there's a renaissance, like, in fact, a former guest of both of you know, The Wire and The Sopranos podcast we did, Mike Isaac, he like mentioned it. He was just like, is everyone else watching Mad Men all at the exact same time? What is happening?
Yes.
And it just made me think, bro, we're like we're trendsetters, dude.
Mm.
We're like the first people to ever
we're talk always about. So far ahead of watching 20-year-old TV shows. It's crazy.
I think it's like a seasonal thing. I know as a fan, I tend to rewatch the show in the fall when I want to have a sad winter. I think right now everyone is wanting to have a sad winter vibe. It's not.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to watch the holdovers and watch Mad Men and be sad about the coming inauguration. Yes. I'm not trying to watch happy Christmas movies. So I think everyone is like,
yeah,
let's just get down with evil men, you know, misogyny, cheating.
Try to understand
it's
them.
All coming back. Like, let's go.
Yeah, that is interesting. I didn't think about the fact that like a lot of it is just therapy for people. They're like, what? How can I escape? And they're like, Mad Men seems fun.
Oh yeah, it's oh, and I mean the way I fell in love with the show, I got my wisdom teeth taken out. I was on Vicodin, stone cold out of it for days, and I just started watching it and was like, this is the best dream I could ever escape to. Everything's beautiful. Everyone is beautiful. Maybe the 60s weren't that bad.
Yeah, seems like things are pretty great over there.
Yeah, you don't even hear anyone complain about racism. Okay,
like I know, finally. It's just like, now you just can't avoid it. In the 60s, they knew people knew how to have a good time by just living in all white spaces and pretending women didn't exist either. But this isn't a show about pretending women don't exist. No, what? This is a show about Mad Men, and we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Woke up this morning, mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chose a Mad Men. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad man, mad man, mad man. Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, we're talking Indian Summer from season 1, episode 11 of Mad Men. Vince, can you break us off a piece of that synopsis?
I sure can.
Off the
Don
top
Draper's
of your head.
Brother is hanging himself.
Yep.
Yes.
Roger Sterling is trying to right the ship and hold it together for his big meeting with the Southerners. Don Draper is still having an affair. Betty is getting a little jealous and she's trying to make Don jealous. And Peggy is learning to become a valued member of the team, but also maybe drinking the Kool-Aid.
All right. So that's what the episode is about. But Vince, tell me, what was happening at the time that the episode is supposed to take place in?
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say is that we cannot evaluate a period piece without the cultural context that it was set in. And to put some of that context back in, we like to go to a little something that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal. There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent. That's news, isn't it?
Ah!
Yes, we're going all the way back to October 4th, 1960. Year of our Lord. I got some stories. I chose the Baltimore Sun this week.
Fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Headline, British TV viewers learn of good life in good old Kansas.
Okay.
London. The folks of Salina, Kansas paraded before British TV viewers tonight and told them what a good town it is to live in. Like Mary Jarvis, housewife, who said, "I think it's possible to live a good life here a lot less expensively than other places." She was being interviewed in the first of a filmed program series screened by Britain's commercial TV under the title Main Street USA. "In Selena," said Mrs. Jarvis, "there are ever so many things you can join. You have to decide what to rule out." The interviewer asked if Mrs. Jarvis often got out of town, to Kansas City, for instance, 200 miles away. This kind of distance would be nearly a day's journey on Britain's twisty and traffic-jammed roadways. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Jarvis intrigued viewers with the reply, "Our carways are so straight, it takes no time to do 200 miles."
Our carways are so straight.
So straight.
Just straight and flat. And it is.
Oh. Not like those gay ones in England.
Yeah. None of that obnoxious scenery.
Yeah, going around those cobblestone streets with the twisties and turnies around all sorts of shires. No, ours is an empty landscape.
Yeah, streets shires. Look like we paved over that shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, straight over. Yeah, ain't no shire here in Kansas.
Whitley Austin, editor of the Selena Journal, recalled his days in Britain. Asked what he thought of the newspapers, he replied bluntly, "Frankly, I was aghast. Acres and acres of divorce proceedings and so on." Austin said he thought Americans had a better education system than the British.
Oh, that's changed.
Wait, yeah. I do love the idea that British newspapers were acres and acres of divorce proceedings. What does that mean? Yeah. Does that mean that's all they publish?
It's like all they want to read about over
okay.
there.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Knife and Graham and his wife Selena Graham broke up again. She's a little tart, isn't she? You know, things have not changed that much. I'm now thinking about all British.
She's back on the market, ain't she?
Yeah. Fresh fish in the market, yeah.
She got the lorry, I heard.
Yeah, she won the lorry.
Wrap her in a newspaper, she's ready to be served.
Show chips on his side. All right.
Other headlines. Eisenhower, now oldest president.
What
president
was
President Eisenhower.
75?
I'll save that for the review.
Okay, okay.
Reveal, sorry. President Eisenhower marked his becoming the oldest United States president in history by working in his office this morning and spending most of the afternoon playing golf. Mm. 11 days before his 70th birthday, the chief executive surpassed the age in office record held by another general who went to the White House, President Andrew Jackson. Eisenhower will be 70 on October 14th.
This
Andrew Jackson, Eisenhower, and then what we're doing
dude,
now.
Dude, yeah. Insane.
And then Biden, Trump, everyone in Congress,
Dude, the fucking gerontocracy I thought was kind of a mainstay, and now I'm kind of realizing it's a new thing. Like, that's crazy old. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. In other news, a jockey got the boner award.
Jockey got the boner award.
jockey got the boner. No divorces here, mate.
Yeah.
Only jockeys getting boner awards. With jockey Anthony Presti earning the Boner Award of the Maryland half-mile racing season, the fifth race became the featured attraction here today as the Hagerstown meeting began its final week.
Hmm. What?
So that's okay.
I tuned out during it. What's the Boner Award?
Yes.
He screwed up. Okay. No less riders than Eddie Alcaro and Willie Shoemaker have misjudged finish lines to pull up their mounts too soon. But Presti pulled a new one in the fifth heat when he drove his mount, Cindy's Delight, on out for a half-mile finish after the actual finish when he had placed second. It was a five-furlong race.
Idiot.
Yeah. And Bucky's Dream, a $27 for $2 shot, won by a length from Cindy's Delight. The other jockeys eased their mounts to a stop, but Presti, with his head down, kept driving until he completed another turn of the half-mile oval and came past the stand, whipping and slashing and staging for a look-pretty finish for the photographer who wasn't there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So he and the horse kept running.
Yeah, they kept running.
But
they'd
already,
like,
they already placed second.
Whatever.
Okay.
Stop being shorter seems like.
And you're telling me the Boner Award is not a real award. A boner is when you mess something up.
Yeah, it's
like, oh, what a boner. Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, look
That's
at this
crazy.
Boner. He's still running like a big old boner.
It's crazy that was a slur back then because, you know, now it's like an accomplishment. Oh, a boner award. Congratulations. You don't have ED.
Yeah.
finally, swimsuit shows all, so girl sues. okay. Atlanta. A 17-year-old girl who claims her bathing suit became transparent the first time she wore it in the water filed a $25,000 damage suit against an Atlanta department store today. The girl said in her petition in Fulton Superior Court that she suffered great mental anguish and has been the butt of jokes and ridicule.
Damn.
I'm on her side.
Yeah, me too. That's fucked up. That's terrible. That's is there no one should have to see that. Is there a picture of that?
No. I'm kidding. Did they put a picture in the paper?
Do they in the paper?
You could tell what they were doing with the headline, but no.
No, with the proof. With the proof, yeah. You know, because I hope there's proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the court, did they have a picture?
Exhibit V. a 1960 graduate of O'Keefe High School, she was described in the petition as, quote, a modest young girl of fine and tender sensibilities.
Yeah.
According to the petition, Linda Rogers wore the new bathing suit for the first time at a senior class party. Mm-hmm. Claude C. Rogers filed the suit on behalf of his daughter. She was walking on the beach at the Callaway Lake when someone threw her in the water, the petition said. Cries of her female companions revealed that said bathing suit had become transparent and did expose plaintiff's nakedness then and there, causing plaintiff great humiliation, mortification, and embarrassment, the suit claimed.
That's fucked up. I hate that. I hope she won the lawsuit.
I don't have an update, unfortunately.
That's good. Hopefully there's a picture. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Everyone knows I'm just kidding. But sometimes now you have to say I'm just kidding, or people
say they don't know you're kidding.
Yeah, everyone's got problems these days. So that's what was happening in America.
Do you feel properly contextualized?
Yeah, then? Now we can talk about this episode, which I'm very excited about. I like this episode a lot. I have just the lyrics to a parody song. Based on the Ricky Nelson song Traveling Man. I'm a traveling salesman. I'm feeling kind of hot. Let me into your room. And I need to see your bedroom. It's a perfect spot to smash that pussy good. All right. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a song I do. But let's talk about this episode. A lot happens. Vince, you brought up all the things that happened in the episode, and let's just get general thoughts on what we thought of this episode. Vince, please.
There are some things that I hate about this episode. From Peggy's fat suit to the writer's apparent need to punish Roger for his bad behavior. And yet mostly a great episode that manages to set things in motion but is also eventful in its own right, with complete arcs for a lot of the characters. And I'm with you. This episode does a lot of things, and I think it mostly, you know, other than the fat suit, which I'm not a fan of, it sets things in motion, but is also just interesting.
Okay, Ashley, what'd you think of this episode?
I love this episode. This is a classic. So much yes. happens in this ep. Obviously, you have Don's brother's suicide, which is a big deal. I believe the introduction of Fat Peggy is so important to season one. It's the first episode where you're like, oh, something's up here. And oh my God, they're all so sexist. Are they going to fire her for being fat?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of wonder when it's a bird. So do I love a fat suit? No. But to the narrative, I don't mind Fat Peggy.
I like Fat Peggy too. It's just, you know,
it does look like a fat suit. It does not, especially the way they do her like jowls. It's so rude. Whoever did the prosthetic, so bad. This is a classic episode. I love it. And I always love when Betty, you know, tries to get one over on Don or just piss him off because she's just so fed up. And I love any time when she's like, you know, I'm going to piss off my cheating husband.
She pokes at him in ways that I'm not even sure she fully knows she's doing it. She's like, she doesn't, I know she...
She's living the unexamined life, and she's only just starting to examine it. And you know, she's not going to therapy 5 days a week, so obviously she could never hope to.
Right.
No, and we know her therapist isn't great, so...
her therapist, that phone call with Dawn and the therapist is so great, because Dawn's like, what do you do? She's even more useless than before.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. You signed up for psychoanalytical therapy, not psychiatry, analytics, and psychology.
It's so funny. It's like, it says without saying basically Livia Soprano's line of like, psychiatry is just a racket for the Jews. Like, that's the feeling of that scene. And of course, it's also Soprano's writer who wrote it. So it's great. And I also love that he's just like, well, I mean, if you really want to cure her, I'll see her all the time. Oh, it's so funny. In terms of the fat
suit, I bet Elizabeth Moss got that in there. She's like, hey, we need to show that psychiatry is bad.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't think about
this
that.
Peak Scientology.
Scientology.
Get that girl an E-meter.
Yes, exactly. Let's get those Thetans out of Betty.
That's kind of what I thought like the vibrator device was at first. I was like, oh shit, this is like
You're like, damn, Elizabeth Moss. Like,
she's doing her free personality test.
So in terms of the fat suit, I'm like embarrassed to say that, like, as I was watching, it was the first time I you know, because they've been calling her fat this whole season as episodes have gone on. Yeah. And I'm always just kind of like, well, you know, what are they talking about? Is she looks exactly the same, you know, from first episode to, you know, episode 10, say. And then this episode.
I knew it was different because I always evaluate women's bodies.
Yeah, I know. It's a thing you do. You're always, you know. You're always trying to guess a BMI. It's your favorite.
I'm pausing the screen. I'm pulling out the tape measure.
Trying to get, you know, the radius of the belly. But this was the first time I was like, oh, dang. Like, she did gain weight. And I am foolish enough that I didn't know it was a fat suit. I just thought, wow, she's really committing to this role. And so I'm not like the best at knowing stuff. But I loved watching Peggy in this episode. This is like, of all of the episodes we've had so far, this is absolutely a Peggy banger.
Yes. This because is a, yes.
It's perfect.
You.
It's so perfect because like we get all the things I love about the show when it comes to Peggy is you get Dawn's mentorship of Peggy, which I love those scenes. I love when Peggy is...
he's such like, a good mentor. Despite
yeah,
being,
sometimes
despite being such a
when
piece
he
of
wants to
guy.
Sometimes be a good mentor. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's funny because you think about like later seasons in which there's a lot more friction between the two. But like early on, just like I just loved watching him like give her another account, first of all, despite Pete's like, you know, naysaying. And then also when she's asking for, you know, a raise, he helps her like do it. I mean, it's like it's
and get coverage on her desk, which gives her a win over Joan, who is like, I am the one who controls, like, you can't be better than me. And now it's like, I love when she's like, can I tell Joan?
Can I
tell her that I make so more, more important? Amazing.
And then, it's so good. And then, you know, also, you know, just I love watching anyone be kind to Peggy. So it's nice to see, you know, Dawn, you know, king of the office, be nice to her. And then also, I just love.
And Cosgrove. Cosgrove gave her a little good job, Pegs.
Kenny is one of those guys like, he just kind of exists. He floats.
You know, he didn't call Joan a bitch, you know.
No, he didn't call Joan a bitch. And he thought it was, like, kind of funny that Frank's wife also had a, you know, a jazzercizer or whatever. Yeah. And, like...
You could tell him not doing that as a diss, just being like, hey, wait a second.
Hey.
Yeah.
Like, because he's just, like, a bovine human where he just sort of, like... does things and like bumbles into stuff with no forethought, and he's just like, oh, hey, didn't your wife like that one?
Yeah. And he's gotten into the most fist fights of anyone in the office.
Yeah.
Because he's accidentally said something horrible and it's or, you know, kind of poked at someone's hidden sensitivity.
Say?
Yeah, exactly. And I love the entire fucking you know, the Rejuvenator storyline is so funny. It's so good. I love the way Peggy's storyline ends with this, like, she's getting the raise and she's like, you know, I'm going to celebrate. And she just goes home to masturbate. Yeah.
He's like, go be with your friends, Peggy. Go hang. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to go home, keep reading about this vibrator, and then use it.
It's so great. And yeah, it's just in general, this episode is, I think, one of my favorites of the season. I just loved it throughout. So getting into that, into the episode, we start off with Adam Whitman sending Dawn a package and then hanging himself. And nothing really comes of this until...
Misspelling Dawn's name, yeah, by the way, on the package.
Oh, cute. Does he? How does he spell it?
Donild, D-O-N-I-L-D.
Oh, it's because he's just white trash.
Stupid boy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He got,
you know, he didn't think to escape.
Yeah, dude. He's from the farm, you know. Yeah. He's living with Uncle Mac and the prostitute or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, then I kicked in the head by a horse. Just yeah, one of my right. favorite yeah, backstory right. notes that we get.
I forgot. Yes, Dawn is like finally telling the story of his family to Rachel in the last episode, and yeah, he's just like, and then Uncle Mac was kicked in the head by a horse. Or just like, oh yeah, that's right. That it seems to be a thing. Like a lot of people died that way, if you believe.
Yeah, pretty most common, I guess.
American yeah. literature.
Yeah,
I mean that was an occupational hazard when you were using
near a horse.
Yeah,
yeah, when you had to use that to plow your little sharecropper field.
I can believe it.
I feel like I'd live.
Mm.
Like you could kick me in the head, you could be a horse that kicks me in the head and I'd live. That's what I feel like.
Yeah, you're made different. Yeah, you would
live. I'm just built that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Adam hangs himself. We don't see what happens.
They should have put
that.
Little Nerf shoes on them instead of the hard metal ones, just like some nice soft foam ones.
Exactly. Yeah. What are they doing? It's like they're trying to get people yeah. killed. It's fucked up. So he hangs himself and sends a package, and we don't see what happens with that until the package shows up in Dawn's office and Pete steals it.
Sneaky
Pete, he's out there. He wants revenge because he's mad that, you know, Dawn.
Yeah, they're bringing someone else in for the head of accounts with Roger out sick, and Pete thinks he should be considered.
Yes, and he, it's his hatred of Dawn is amazing because
this was such a great Pete episode, just in yes. general, like his
good dick Pete episode,
his yeah. His just desperate laughter, like oh yeah. so
yes
oh yeah he's, when he yells at yeah. his secretary when she's like, you tell me the second they're out of the meeting, and she's like, oh yeah, I'll just stare at the door. He's like,
I love
fuck do you think you're talking to me?
I have the clip of that.
Cooper and Draper just so went good. To Sterling's office. Tell me when they come out of there, will you?
Sure. I'll just sit here and watch the door. That's all I'll do.
Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
So
she is being kind of a bitch to him in the context of that office where everybody's yeah. secretary
okay.
like,
well, clearly their yeah. cycles are synced up. That's why Joan mm-hmm. is being a bitch. Jane's
yes.
being a bitch.
Everyone's
come
being
on. Yeah. And Peggy mm-hmm. should be realizing this episode. How come yeah. I'm not being a bitch?
How come I'm not being a bitch? Yeah. I should be a bitch right now.
And I'm not.
There must be something in the
See,
tummy.
That's the subtext. That's yes. the subtext.
Yes. But yeah, like, you know, Pete is someone who feels shit on by Dawn and shit on by, like, you know, he feels like he's going to be denied advancement in this office. And it's just watching his like desperate sucking up after Dawn gets made partner in this episode is so, it's like hard to watch because Dawn is like throwing tons of shade at him in that scene where, you know, he's just like, you know, he says something along the lines of like, I think you're really talented and I liked your pitch or something. And he basically, Dawn just goes, yeah, I know. He's like essentially just being like, yeah, I'm great. I know. And just watching him, you know, begging this guy to like, please don't overlook me. I know we haven't always gotten along, but I try really hard. It's great.
Yeah. Like I've said, Pete's entire thing is lacking guile. So it's like, you see the push pull between Pete's first instinct, which is just to hate John, hate Don because he's jealous of him. But then it like comes up against his better judgment, which is like, oh, I should kiss this guy's ass for advancement. But he like can't do it suavely because he can't do anything suavely.
He can only sell hard. And we know that disgusts Don. Like we saw in last week's episode, you know, when the girl's like, I'll do whatever you say. Please, I'm begging to suck your dick. And he's like, you don't, please calm down. And that's all he sees when he looks at Pete. You can see the disgust in his eyes, and Pete just cannot pick up on it. It's
because
so
Don is like disgusted by any human frailty, and Pete just always wears his like frailty and craven careerism just like on his sleeve, and Don's just like, ew, gross, get out of here.
It is it's great to watch. And you know, earlier I was talking about you know, the Mad Men discourse, you know, is picking up on social media. And one of the things in the discourse is people saying like the actor, like the saying they don't like Pete, the guy who plays Pete, Pete Campbell. And you know, this is, of course, social media. And obviously it's built. It's like, to me, I'm like, that's total bait. He is so wonderful with this character. He he embodies his character so much. Like, I don't know if you can teach what he does in terms of like that, wearing the desperation on you know, on his face.
He's like the perfect proto incel, because he does like what every manosphere guy does, which is that like his weakness and desperation is like palpable, and people are grossed out by it. And then he's just like, why don't people treat me like they treat other people? Because you're not smooth.
And he doesn't understand, like, why don't the secretaries respond to me like Don Draper? Like, why can't I just grab Peggy and she wants me? And it's like, because you're gross. And they say,
you give people the ick because you're not comfortable with yourself. Duh.
Yes. So yeah, the you know, we let's get into Peggy and the vibrator storyline, since that is, I think, everyone's favorite. And we start out with Peggy on the phone with her mom, who is trying to set her up with a boy that she knows from the neighborhood. And you know, we talked about her being excited to tell Joan that she's gonna get her own, you know, fucking, you know, new desk and everything. And half of that is because Joan is just standing there listening to this fucking phone call. It's a private phone call between her and her mom. And she's like, are you listening? And he's like, oh, are you doing it on company time?
Right.
Just like, damn. One of the reasons you feel happy for Peggy is because she's, you know, she is being shit on by Joan all the time. It's not cool. You know, Joan. Joan needs to treat her
better. You know, Peggy is sort of pushing against Joan's power a lot. And we also have to, Joan is also in sort of a vulnerable place right now, whereas Roger, someone she cares about, has gone through this situation. No one's really telling her in for details. And then she has that, you know, she's kind of in a, where am I in my life? I thought I had this relationship with this guy who's clearly close to death. And all I really have is this job where I get to yell at women.
Where I get to be queen bee. And you know, she, it's funny, you know, she, after that scene, Joan goes up to Don and is just like, you know, have you heard anything about what's happening with Roger? And he's very dismissive, like, I'll update you, I don't fucking know. And you know, just let him know that I'm thinking about him. And then
we're all thinking
we're all thinking about him. And then everyone walks into the office and Pete is just like, Joan's been kind of a bitch lately. Just, it's so,
and well, they all are like, Joan's being a bitch, and then Sal is like, and I kind of like it. And I'm like, you're too gay. You're being too gay, Sal. Too gay.
Yeah, careful.
No,
we
come on.
Get away.
You can't do that.
Don't admit how much you like imperious women.
Come on, no, please.
Oh man. But yeah, so he like, you know, they call her a bitch, and then they all get together and they're sitting around this thing that's like, it has some like long scientific name, and it's a weight loss product.
Hold on, I wrote it down. It is the PER, the personal exercise, personal, I forget what the R stands for, personal exercise, whatever. But this was apparently a real product, trivia, that was called the Relaxicizer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I know this genre of product existed. You see like old footage from the 60s, sometimes, you know, it spliced into whatever random thing, and there'll be like a guy standing up and a big belt like mm-hmm. around his tummy, and it's just jiggling. And it's like
they still have these things, by the way, like things that like are electrostimulator that are supposed to exercise you without you doing anything.
Right. And like they don't work. Right.
I don't know. I mean, they use them for like physical therapy sometimes, but I imagine they're not like,
yeah,
exercise.
I don't think you lose real weight with it.
Yeah,
that's too bad. Cause it seems like there's nothing I'd love more than to wake up swole.
Well, the thing is, it's not like your muscles are still working when you do it. So it's not like you're not going to be expending energy. Like it's still making your muscles contract. It just takes the willpower
the same,
out of the equation.
Isn't
or
it like the same technology that they use to do those like cool smoothing things where it's like it doesn't make you lose weight, but it like tones your fat and just kind of makes it look less saggy or something.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's has some benefits, I'm sure.
It does something. But the thing that it actually does is revealed in this episode. It makes women come.
Gets ladies off.
Which I love, and it's funny that like there is a whole industry of things that have existed under like the utility of them has been hidden as something else. A massager, a weight loss machine, you know,
A washing machine.
A cucumber that you get at the market. Like all of these things are secretly for masturbation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It just reminded me of the time I saw my mom's Hitachi magic wand was under the bed, and I thought it was, I didn't know what it was. Mm. And when I learned what it was from like years later, I just had like end of Usual Suspects type flashbacks.
Your coffee mug falling.
Coffee mug slowly, slow motion falling to the ground as I think back to me holding it with my hand.
The picture of Tom Selleck on the wall.
Oh man. But yeah, so they don't know what to do with this. Dawn says something kind of, I don't know. So they're like, well, how do we prove, you know, it's hard to prove weight loss. And Dawn says, no, it isn't. But before and after pictures, it's worked since the dawn of time. Yeah. And I was like, you fucking idiot. There's no pictures before, you know, back in caveman days. But then I started thinking, were they drawings?
Yeah.
You know, it was like, maybe caveman drawings, like before, after pictures.
Yeah.
Flabby caveman, strong caveman. Strong,
yeah. Me before hunter-gatherer.
Me before better spear, after better spear.
Every morning, grog hunt, grog gather for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Just to look hot. I love that like in this context it's still like if you're fat it's ugly, even though like 100% if you were like fat you were probably very rich.
Yeah, like that's an amazing person, they have so many resources.
Oh my god. A king. But yeah, so they decide to call in Betty, and Pete is naysaying against it, and you know he's like, no, I promised the client we'd bring out the big guns. And Don's like, the big guns are silent, and brings in Peggy. And I was just like, I love that. I love that. Yeah. Because at that moment, Pete totally could have shot her down. Like he's trying to ice her out. He low key.
Yeah, that's his first instincts.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
his first instinct is to ice her out. And then he has a second thought where he's like, wait, what's good for my career in this situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so Peggy comes in. First, she comes in because she's delivering some water. And then they bring her back in and they say, like, hey, there's a weight loss machine that we need your opinion on. And she's like, why my opinion? And they're just like, no reason.
No, they're like, because you're a woman. And then Freddie's like, and because you're so good at copywriting.
Yeah.
She's like,
oh,
it
also, right. Because, yeah, skills. And yeah.
That's right. And yeah, she immediately takes it home and gets in a fight with her roommate. And
Peggy's a bad roommate.
She is. I'm sorry, yeah. Peggy, but I don't care if you don't use the phone. We split the phone bill. Like,
crazy.
What? You don't have family that calls you on that phone? You're giving out the phone number, Peggy. Like, that's, you're being ridiculous.
She's doing the thing where she's like, why am I paying for someone else's health insurance?
You know, yes, exactly.
She's like, no, the fucking point is that you have it.
And she's eating her roommate's food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. She's not a good roommate. I was noticing this too. And I was like,
she ate all my liverwurst. Whew.
Yeah.
I'd be spicy too.
And sardines.
Both of them?
Yeah.
That's all the salt in the house.
She must smell so bad.
God, like, damn. Can you imagine?
Just like housing liverwurst and sardines and then jilling off with her like electric vibrator underwear.
Oh,
yeah.
Imagine the smell of the
relaxer. You know it smells crazy in there.
They wear a lot of layers of wool too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Also, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyways. So, yeah, she puts it on. And immediately starts feeling pleasure and gets scared, which I love. I relate to. I think I remember the first time I put something on my penis and it felt good and I got scared because I was just like, oh no, is God gonna be mad? she comes in the next day and summarizes the weight loss belt to the best of her ability, but isn't able to fully describe it because she just doesn't know how to write, you know, politely about coming real hard. Mm-hmm. And eventually
she's all just, like, sensations.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Just an experience.
Yes,
and then Donna's like, oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That I've done that to Betty literally
one time.
Yeah.
This whole thing was just like this whole episode was just like a giveaway to sociology majors, like trying to write a thesis. Here you go. You have Betty, or you have Peggy, and you have Joan.
Yeah.
There's gonna be a conflict between your joy coming from being attractive to men and actually, like, you know, getting off.
Yeah. And so, Dawn likes what she has to say so far and, you know, asks her to, like, you know, basically write out a full pitch for it and ends up giving her, like, some advice, some creative advice, which is truly some of the best creative advice possible. Mm-hmm. I have a clip of that.
Peggy, just think about it deeply. Then forget it. And an idea will jump up in your face.
Thank you.
I love that so much because it is actual, like, that's real advice.
Yeah.
That works really, really well.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's, like, willing to impart that that advice, I don't know. It makes me feel good.
He takes her seriously. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay. He's sharing some of the knowledge, and we know he just gets drunk, forgets everything he heard in the meeting, and then just, you know, stares at a picture until he's like, I got it. So, yeah.
That's also a good point, is that he's like, it works for me, but that's kind of on accident. But yeah, it's just very sweet the way he's, like, truly being helpful and, you know, giving that creative advice. And for anyone else out there who is, you know, creative, that does work. It's like my... that's the best way to write jokes about something too, is if you have a premise and then you write it out, you know, a bunch of stuff over and over, and it's all going to be dog shit. And then at some point, once you've, like, put it down, you're going to come up with the best tags ever. And it works most of the time. So Peggy goes on this date with a handsome man who Mama set her up with. And she's being kind of mean.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew right away. You're like, this biff ass motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, this guy ain't right.
She knew She was like, I got to turn this guy off. I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm a lady and I smoke.
Yeah. I was.
I liked the cultural the cultural signifiers, like the split between Manhattan and Brooklyn, and how big it was in 1960 compared to now.
Was there no bridge or something? You know,
I mean, she was obviously getting to work, but
you know. I mean, I assume I think swimming.
They had the bridge.
I mean, yeah. It's crazy to me because as someone who's never like lived on the East Coast or never lived in New York or, you know, whatnot, the way in which people talk about the neighborhood, you know, the way she talks about Manhattan is just not something that you never hear anyone, at least I never hear anyone nowadays talking about Manhattan specifically as, you know, like, oh, we got to go to Manhattan.
Yeah, no.
You
I know? Mean, if anything, I lived avoid in both, it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I lived in both Manhattan and Brooklyn, but like the cultural different, and like there's some of that in Sex and the City too, where they're all
right.
Like, ew, yeah, Brooklyn, I would never move out of Manhattan. But like, yeah, by like the mid 2000s or whatever, it was very, I mean, there was still a cultural difference, but it was more like, ooh, like new hip or like old hip and possibly
right.
Like overdeveloped or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But it's interesting because it's like the way in which she's just like, people in Manhattan are better, you know, yeah. To this guy.
Yeah.
Aren't they just from Brooklyn? Aren't they both like Brooklyn people?
Yeah, but you'd figure they would to something more.
Yeah,
right.
She wants to be that madman executive, you know, Madison Avenue.
She's Don's brother, or no? She's Don, and he's Don's brother.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess it's just like I just think about it. Like, there's people from Orange County who say they're from L.A. You know what I mean? So it's like the idea that they would, you know. Be that she wouldn't already kind of consider herself a New Yorker or a Manhattanite or whatever. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know shit about. I know it's that New York's big and everyone says it's the like the Big Apple. So I assume.
Well, what year did they make it
big?
Yeah. Well, what year did they make it so that people that live in Queens and Brooklyn are counted as part of as
the bridge
New
and
York
tunnel
city?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They're still different boroughs, but at some point they made it like they officially made it one city.
Yeah, I don't know what
don't,
year
I,
that
I,
was.
Don't couldn't tell you, but yeah. I think people in Manhattan just look down on Brooklyn in a way where even news covered in the major papers, I think, focused on Manhattan. Like services weren't as good in Brooklyn.
I mean, it's the central part. It's like it's the downtown, and it's self-contained. Whereas, like you know, Brooklyn and Queens, they kind of stretch off.
Mm-hmm.
They stretch off into other parts of the state, and it's not.
It is true that like that whole you know Brooklyn and Queen like that whole shit keeps going.
Yeah,
and you're just like, where's that? What's all that? What happens here? You know, you look at a map, you're like, what's all this then?
Yeah.
But she's
what's
on this.
What's Odiston?
She's on a date with this biff ass guy who I thought was hot, so I thought she'd at least be like, oh shit, he kind of hot. But I think just because he is
yeah, he looks like a dweeb if you ask me, but
I
got
listen,
dweeb, but
yeah, I just thought, you know, he was in the suit, he looked hot to me.
I couldn't smell the truck stench and see the hand calluses that mark him as a blue collar worker.
I mean, it's crazy because it's like that's is like nowadays that's like more hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if someone was just like, oh, I work in an office, you'd be like, that's a dweeb, you know?
Yeah, I was actually, like, doing Christmas shopping yesterday, and I was passing the store Ariat. I don't know if you have that store where it's, like,
kind
of like Ariat. It's sort of like Carhartt, but more cowboyish. Like, they sell, you know, like, work
not
gear.
Familiar.
And cowboy.
I don't know.
All of the, like, big ads, you know, like, the big posters for it on the outside where it's just, like, man working in hard hat with sweaty forearms and like the guy loading stuff into a pickup truck. I'm like, this is indistinguishable from gay porn. It looks exactly like gay porn. Like these are all gay porn scenarios.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like been what people have been
that's
lusting
what sells,
after.
Yeah. Why do you think Sal is so successful on the show? Because he knows that from day one. You got to make things look like gay porn.
Exactly. That's why he works so well. And it's funny because back in those days, all of the ads, what were they? Guy in business suit.
Yep.
Guy who works at a white collar job. Like that was the hottest. That's what you would aspire to be. Anyone who worked with their hands, it was just like, ew.
Yeah.
But now we fetishize that. Anywho, so she's on this date with him, and they are just, they're flinging barbs at each other, and I have a clip of their date.
I already wrote copy for Belle Jolie lipsticks. It's going to be in a bunch of magazines.
Which ones?
I don't think you read them. They're about high fashion.
Ooh. Advertising doesn't work on me.
If advertising is good, people never think it works.
Did they ever prove that?
Why are you insulting what I do?
So you drive a truck. I'm my own boss, you know? You get off the train every day at Grand Central and they spray you with gold? Let me tell you. You can act like you're from Manhattan, but you don't look like those girls.
Those people? In Manhattan? They are better than us. Because they want things they haven't seen.
Ooh, God.
I always love these scenes in movies and TV because, like, I've had... like bad first dates where, you know, I probably like said a thing where I could tell it didn't go over well and vice versa.
Yeah.
But I've never just had that situation where you just like have it out with someone because like, I don't like you.
Yeah. I've had that happen.
Really?
Yeah. I was in Portland. I went out with this guy and pretty much immediately he started being like, I'm very into German history. And he just started saying very incorrect things. He was like, you know, the Berlin Wall didn't just fall a few years ago.
All that of white Christendom did.
Yeah, he's like, that was centuries ago. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? The Berlin Wall? Yeah, and I was like, it fell in the 80s. Like, Michael Jackson was there. Like, what are you talking about? And then he just...
David Hasselhoff knocked that shit down.
Yeah, and he was like, well, what do you know? Germans are blah, blah. And I was like, I am a German history major. Like, I... and I'm leaving.
Wait, I gotta know, what did he mean by the Berlin Wall fell like
it was
of years
supposed
ago?
To be something about how all Germans were kind of like very timely like the Nazis, and I was like, well, no, and after the Nazis fell there was plenty of time for the country to like rebuild, and in West Germany it was very westernized and eastern, right. Blah, blah, blah. And so no, there's very different context of how Germans have come to be, and even East Germany is more open towards like queerness and sexuality, and there's different capitalism, socialism, da, da, da. And he was just like, no, they were Nazis, and then America was like, used to don't be. That's how he thought it went, and he was just like, and so it. They didn't, you know, they didn't unlearn any of the timeliness the Nazis taught them.
That is
just
crazy.
Like, oh no, there was so many years that happened between
I love that he opened
this conversation with I really love German history,
yeah.
As if it's the second half of the sentence is like, I hope to one day learn some.
I was like, yeah. Okay, you're gonna pick it up someday, you'll check it out, and you'll figure out when the Berlin Wall fell, and it's gonna blow your mind. It's good because you can watch it on TV is how modern it was.
My lame version of that was, I think it was like a first date. It was probably like one of the apps, and we were like sitting outside having a drink or a coffee or something. And like, you have that situation where someone on a motorcycle drives by and you have to like be quiet for the next 60 seconds while their stupid ass like
revs their, yeah.
And you know, I was expressing my complaint about how much I hate stupid ass motorcycles, as I do, and
she's like, "Oh, my dad is a motorcycle."
Like,
oh, no,
I
but she was clearly like, she's clearly like a motorcycle gal, and I was like, "Oh, oops,
fucked it up. Fucked it up."
No, I think it's hot.
I love it when it's loud and wakes up everyone.
Yeah, it's so fun.
It's the best when my vehicle announces its presence.
Yeah, I love when they cut between cars, and you're like, I'm scared. I love it.
Yeah. I love when you drift just a little bit, you know, in your car, and then they get mad at you.
Yeah, like
because
you're the one,
like,
who told them to go between a car. And,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I get that it's legal, but what are you doing, asshole? So yeah, anyways, bad date. Doesn't go well. I don't think Biff's gonna get another shot.
No.
And Peggy, you know, gives her
which is good because she's pregnant anyway. Yeah. Like, what's he gonna do? Raise that kid? He's gonna raise little. Imagine little Pete getting raised by truck stop
Biff.
By truck stop Biff. It's kind of what we might deserve, actually.
Yeah.
Why don't
you
play sports, son?
Yeah. Like, exactly.
Actually, father, I've been learning to speak with a mid-Atlantic accent.
Daddy. I would much rather play cricket.
I've been getting into the
work. Your truck is ever so dirty.
Yeah, exactly. Peggy goes to work next day, does her vibrator presentation, does a good job, calls it the Rejuvenator. Everyone makes fun of
Dawn.
Mitch's...
called it the Rejuvenator.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Dawn called it that. She calls it like the something else.
Something like stupid in Latin.
Oh, no, no, no. You're right. You're right. It was she. No, she came up with Rejuvenator. Dawn called it the Electricizer.
Electricizer.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
Everyone talks about how Mitch's wife is hot, and then Kenny makes fun of Frank. Frank almost fights him, and Dawn is able to really defuse that. And Peggy finally asks for a raise, and Dawn teaches her how to lean in, and I have that.
But I think I could serve Sterling Cooper and you better as a copywriter if I had my own desk.
You have a desk.
But now I have radio spots.
Peggy, the conversation of a raise is not inappropriate at this moment, but do not be timid. You presented like a man, now act like one.
Mm. I want $5 a week more.
Jesus, what do you make?
$35 a week.
Well, that's a 15% kick.
He's so good at math. That was bad.
Yeah, he was able to get that math immediately.
That was like five, yeah. I was still not even there yet, but I do like that he's like, you broke bitch. That's all we pay you. $35 a week. Wow, yeah, okay.
And you guys want the inflation calculator?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, yes.
$35 a week in 1960 is $397.
Okay.
$370, which if she's getting paid for all 52 weeks works out to $19,000 and $19,240 a year.
Which I mean but is I feel like that's, probably on
that
par
was
with
decent
an
at
level.
One point that yeah. was a decent wage, right? I mean not like the worst wage in the world.
Yeah, like when yeah, I started sure. as an entry level like media associate in advertising, my salary was $22K and that was less than what I had been making at the fast food place that I worked at before that. And it's yeah. like your first 2 years that's what you make and then eventually you're promoting, you make real money. But
I made $29,000 a year in my first year as a copywriter.
I remember the first time I made $40,000 a year.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, I'm fucking rich.
Yeah.
It was so amazing. I think I cried. What I love about that too is like he laughs. He's like, I want $5 more a week, and he laughs at her like, damn, you broke. And then he asks for her salary, and then he does the math and is like, well, I don't know, it's a little high of a percentage.
Like, oh no.
He's nickel and diming her over something he literally laughed at. That's so funny.
Like he could double it and be fine, and he's still like, but I don't know.
Oh no, it's so I love him so much, and I love, you know, that advice. You know, you've presented like a man, act like a man. It's just kind of like, you know, it's gruff, it's mean, it's paternalistic, it's beautiful. I love everything about it. He is, you know, treating her like one of the boys, and for her, I think that is, you know, what she's always wanted.
Going back to the previous scene, there is something like nostalgic about the days when you could nearly get into a fist fight in the office with a coworker, and then like 5 minutes later everybody would be just like,
I gotta get back to work.
Now like two passive aggressive emails and you might get fired
straight up. I had to have a talk with my boss because I, oh, did you hear a baby screaming? Yeah, that was my baby. I had to like have a talk with my boss because I wrote an email too sharply. Because I had to tell people, one of the other managers at the office, I'm not being mean to you. This is just how I email. And so I turned that into my my signature in my email. And so I had to have a talk with my boss. He's like, can you just delete that from your email? And I was like, It's the only way I can let people know I'm not yelling at them. Yeah. I don't know what to fucking tell you.
I get that because people, I don't use emojis and stuff, so people will be like, "Oh no, it's me," and I'm like, "No, I really am saying no problem." Like it's
yeah. No, I have the
K is short for okay.
Yeah.
No, I have exclamation point inflation in my emails because like I'm like overcompensating because. You know, I don't feel enthusiastic about this, but I'm putting the fake exclamation point in there so that you think that I'm being nice. But then I always wonder, I assume it comes off like when a northerner says y'all, where it's like, you know that that's fake. Like, I know that when people read that from me, it's like, oh, this is transparent phoniness.
Yeah, but sometimes you need, that's just politeness. I understand that. But I don't know, within, anyways, office politics, who care? Peggy gets the raise. Dawn tells her to leave work early and celebrate with her friends. She goes home to masturbate. I love this show. And we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we get back, we will talk about what's going on with Betty and what's going on with Roger. But stick around. Listen to these ads. We'll be right back.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man. We're here with our wonderful guest, Ashley Ray, who is here talking Mad Men, Season 1, Episode 11 with us. It's a hot day. It's a hot day in New York, and Betty is...
Man, it's a hot one.
Yeah.
She
just
is
like the opening of...
Go
Rob
on.
Thomas is smooth with Carlos Santana.
Is that the first lyrics?
Oh, yeah.
Man, it's a hot
one.
Oh,
it's a hot one. Like 7 inches from the midday sun.
Wow.
I did that at Six Flags. You used to be able to like record yourself doing karaoke. And
yes, I remember that.
I did that song. And then when my friends would ride in my car, I would play it like I was on the radio. And I'd be like, guys, this is so crazy.
That's
that my cover of Smooth is on the radio. Yeah.
I'm huge. I'm on K-Rock.
Yeah, so 97ZOK in Rockford. They are loving my version of the song.
So it is hot. Betty is reading in bed when we first see her. And no Dawn. Dawn is at Rachel's telling her that he never thinks about his wife and what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah,
and
she's
Rachel
like,
is just like...
I love that Rachel, before she's like... It must be, it's so hard for me, but it must be even harder for you. And he's like, no, it's not hard for me at all. I just literally don't think about that bitch.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, I don't care. Yeah. And then she's like, that must be a Gentile thing. Yeah. And Rachel, you know, later has like a Chinese food dinner with her sister, who is like super excited to tell her about Dawn, you know, like wants to hear about Dawn the Goy or wants to hear about the Goy. And Rachel, you know, is like, hey, remember that guy I was telling you about? He's married, though. And then immediately the sister's like, whoa, what the fuck are you doing?
Missed the best line in that exchange.
What was the best line?
She's like, I don't think I'm ready for that right now. And her sister's like, oh, because you're getting so much younger every day.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's so harsh. The sister says, hey, you probably shouldn't be doing that. You know, all I know about that is movies in which the man never leaves his wife and or kills the woman who he's cheating with.
Incredibly good advice.
Which, you know, that is how it usually pans out. I watch a lot of Oxygen, Court TV. It is, there's whole shows, Fatal Attractions. You know, what I didn't know about my husband. There's so
snapped.
Many. Snapped. Snapped.
Yeah, it just seems like probably in general good advice.
There's an entire genre of true crime where it all comes down to, well, I guess I just had to kill him because I didn't want to admit wanting to get a divorce. And you're like, wow,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
We should stop stigmatizing divorces so that more men are alive. You know? But yeah, so she starts lying, being like, "Oh no, we haven't been stripping.
Yeah,
nothing's happened.
No, I just think he's like kind of cute. Like,
I just think he's cute. I have never had his schmeckle in or around my mouth, or vagina." And so yeah, she's getting some actually good advice from her sister. Meanwhile, Betty is hot.
I like how all Yiddish words sound like onomatopoeia.
Yeah, they are. It's essentially, it's just like, what does that sound like? It's a word. So Betty is glistening, and an AC salesman rings the bell.
Yeah.
And
in her
and
full
he's...
teddy baby doll lingerie, by the way. Yeah. Like it's yeah. the middle of the day. She has not gotten dressed. She is fully just in like Valley of the Dolls baby doll lingerie.
Yes. Just nightgowning in the daytime. And yeah, he comes in because he's hot and needs some water, which, I mean, you know, I never thought it would happen to me, you know, Playboy Forum or Penthouse yeah. Forum, like
yeah,
stories.
Let's
they all start
real.
This way.
He's a cutie. You said Biff was good. Yeah. This guy, this yeah. salesman, yes. he's the cutie. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't like his sales tactics, but he was very handsome.
I mean, they filmed it in a way, this scene, especially at the beginning where you don't see his face, where you are low key, like, is she going to get murdered?
Yeah.
But then he once you see him, he's cute, and you're just like,
she's gonna get stabbed or just pounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know what's gonna happen. And then it becomes pretty clear that he is just an AC salesman, and he's like telling her, you know, how cold air escapes and hot air gets in, and she's just like, he's sweaty, I'm sweaty. Yeah, yeah. She's like,
yeah,
that's
she's
crazy.
Like, I don't know.
You're
I
just
guess
swirling
maybe
her
my like husband would like know about it. I don't know. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
You're just a woman, so you probably don't know the difference between cold air and hot air.
Yeah.
But it's very complicated.
He's like, and when yeah. your husband comes home, you know, yeah. Maybe I could just leave a note explaining what a window is.
Yeah, exactly.
The only like question I had about this scene was like, does he only want to make the sale, or does he also want to smash?
I think
yeah. it's both.
Look at
too.
Betty.
I,
you're gonna want to
yes.
smash.
Yeah.
In
come
that
on.
Outfit with her hair. Yeah, come yeah. on.
They're about to go up to the bedroom. I think he also reads perfectly clear when she stops and yeah. is just like, please go. That like she knows what or he knows what's going on there. He's like, okay, yes, this is probably bad and wrong, and she's not into it. Like he's not like, oh, but come on, I got AC unit, I want to sell it to you, man. It's mm-hmm. bullshit.
Yeah. She's like we'll go to Sears, and he's like, if that's what you want, girl.
He's like, all right, okay. You know, go to Sears. But if you ever want to try something new,
yeah, some local.
I'll come here's back and car. Go upstairs and show you my unit anytime you want.
Yeah. AC stands for a cock. Yes. She's about to, you know, she's about to let him up, but she has second thoughts. Tells him to leave. Meanwhile, Betty and Dawn are back in bed together, and it's hot still. And she just brings up, oh, you know, the AC salesman said that hot air escapes or, you know, cold air escapes this way. And he pieces together, you let someone inside the house. And he gets, I would say, unreasonably mad at her.
Yeah.
And I like the thing he is worried about, it seems, is, well, anything could have happened to you. You could have been attacked. You could have been assaulted. But I got the feeling from the phone call with the therapist that he is maybe a little worried that she might just like fuck some other guy. Am I wrong about that? Maybe I'm.
Yeah, I think that was
yeah,
what
I
the,
think. Yeah, I think part of it is he can tell that she's unfulfilled and is seeking like that attention. And
yes,
I think he knows that. I think he knows it's like she didn't just let this guy in the house because she's stupid and really had like is concerned about the AC. I think he knows like, oh, I like she might be looking for something else.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I got from it too. Also, like the size of beds in that era, my God,
so
can you
small.
Imagine like sharing like a twin bed as a married
God,
person?
Yeah,
oof.
Yeah. This yeah. is also that, fun. The first time we're seeing them share a bed again since like episode 9. Like,
oh
it's
yeah,
been
that's
two
crazy.
Episodes since we've even seen, and then this you see Betty alone, and he's with Rachel, and then finally when they do come together, And you can tell it's kind of like Don wants to play that role of like the good husband and he's all happy. And then she drops this bomb just to piss him off.
Yeah.
Just to be does he even really care about me? Because I haven't seen him around. And then she gets the answer she wants and she's bragging to the neighbor about it.
Yeah. You know, but she does bring it up because she is, I think, trying to get it on with Don. And she says something along the lines like, you're right, it's too hot. And then she's like, starts bringing up the AC salesman right after that. So I think she's horny.
She's
mad.
Hoping that his response is going to be to get competitive. And
yeah, I was like, no, I'll fuck you. I'll do it right now. which sounds loving. But, oh, baby crying. So he gets really mad. He's just like, good night. And Betty has to, like, you know, basically tell Francine, the neighbor, about this. And Francine is like, why did you tell Dawn? And, you know, she's like, I don't know.
Like, I don't know. And he's just like, but he's mm-hmm. protective. Very protective. And it's like, bitch, he has not been home in a week. Like, he's could break in, you get stabbed. He would not know for 3 days until he leaves the office. Like, what? Who cares?
Yes. And meanwhile, Francine is straight up... Francine is just like, oh, if I did that, my husband would break my arm. You're like,
he would just beat me.
What?
And Betty's like, crazy. And he'd have every right to.
And I deserve it. And so later we see another masturbation scene in this show. Betty uses the dryer to masturbate.
Hell yeah.
Dryer, more like wetter.
Wow. I got to give a shout out to Home Improvement for doing the fucking spin cycle masturbation bit before
were they the first? That's crazy. I need to rewatch.
I don't know. I remember it. No, you don't, because it's one of the worst shows ever made.
I would love to. We could start a podcast. It could be called Arg Yourself a Huh. You know?
Yeah. No, I remember them doing that bit though. I don't know.
Okay. And then Betty finds out that Dawn is gonna get a fucking he's gonna be made partner, and then she apologizes. That's what happens with Betty. And finally, Lucky Strike and Roger.
My boy Roger.
Yes, my beautiful
baby.
You
didn't ask me who my favorite was. It's Roger, my boy.
he's up there for me too. He might be my favorite character.
Probably
on the show.
Only character I've ever enjoyed who has done blackface.
Yeah, right.
He gets all the best
only
lines.
On the list.
Like every, all the best lines in the show. It's always funny in the credits where they say, "and a special guest appearance by John Slattery," and I'm like, "He's in every episode. What are you talking about? A special guest appearance?
He's just that good.
It's got to be. You know, he's like Don. He's like no contracts.
He's got that sharp beaky Irish nose makes him look like a fucking falcon.
And even he in this episode, he's supposed to be like deadly sickly coming back for the meeting. They have Joe and they're like, can you make him look less bad? And then they cut to him and he looks beautiful. He's like,
he looks
cheery,
great.
Red faced. Mm-hmm. He looks great. I'm like, I'm very
confused by this exact thing. I when he comes in and the ad execs, the junior execs are all just like, oh god, he looks like he's gonna die.
Shit. Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh, what an ugly.
I guess they made his lips look a little pale. That's the only thing that I could tell.
He's still just cheery, looking hot ass like John Slattery.
He looks great. He looks great.
It's like he has a thing in his contract that's like, I will not look unattractive.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
That was my thing about Elizabeth Moss. It made me impressed with her because I don't think that many actresses, like at the sort of beginning of their career, would be like, oh, yeah, I'll spend the entire first season of my star turn show looking
slowly
like
putting
worse
on, a fatter fat suit every week.
Yeah. I mean, she.
Meanwhile, I have to act opposite fucking Christina Hendricks, like looking like
Christina Hendricks.
Yeah. He's just hotter and hotter every episode.
Like ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, not as hot as last week with the lesbian roommate and that black outfit, but she had some hitters in this one.
You know, this is a weird thing, and I'll just say it out loud right now. I don't give a fuck, but like, I was always just a butt guy my whole life. And then I watched Mad Men, and for the first time ever, I was just like, I enjoy titties too.
Wow.
Anyways, I just
a big realization for you.
I wanted to admit that.
That's the kind of change that the show brings.
Exactly. That's why they call it prestige TV. That's a
double D the
thought.
Change you want to see.
Double C. So yeah, Cooper tells Don that Lucky Strike is coming in because they are like, hey, if Roger is dead, I don't know if we can continue because they like him. Who knows? And Roger comes back to the office. They give him a round of applause. Everyone calls him ugly. He looks like shit, apparently. I don't know what they see. He looks
I just
exactly
like the entire
the
subtext of this, which is that capitalism cannot acknowledge mortality.
Yeah.
Yes. Like- yes. And it is great because Mona, you know, has this scene where she's yelling at, you know, Bert Cooper. And the Lucky Strike guy is like, you know, I didn't think you could put a price on a human life.
Yeah. And the Lucky Strike guy is like, oh, yeah, you absolutely can. We do it every day. We sell cigarettes every day. We're
I
like,
sell
yeah.
cigarettes.
Yeah. He's like, I'll tell you the price of your life right now.
Yeah. I'm trying to kill people. But yeah, Roger needs to get some makeup. And so they have Joan come in. And so Joan and Roger finally get to be alone since the heart attack. And Roger... Roger compliments Joan. I need to say that again. These are all compliments. And the way in which she takes it is as compliments. Mm-hmm. But listening to it, it's the funniest. It's like it is just so funny. And I'll play it right now.
I want to tell you something because you're very dear to me. And I hope you understand it comes from the bottom of my damaged heart. You are the finest piece of ass I ever had. And I don't care who knows it. I am so glad I got to roam those hillsides.
Stop it.
I mean it.
I'm so glad I got to roam those hillsides. She says stop it, not because, like, you know, gross, what are you doing? She says stop it because it's so sweet.
Yeah, she's like, stop it. I can't.
I'm stopping.
Oh,
yeah, don't say your goodbyes. Like, she's a little bit worried that, like, maybe he's gonna break it off.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny to just be like, you know, I've had a lot of time to reflect post heart attack, and upon reflection, I love having
humming
sex.
Humming
you're
humming
such
humming
a fine piece ass. Like, this. Yeah.
Upon reflection, awooga. And then Roger enters the meeting with Lucky Strike. He seems to be doing okay. And Roger's making a toast with a pastrami sandwich and has a heart attack. Fucking hilarious. Okay. Just beautiful.
What do you think the end of that toast was going to be?
I don't know. What does he say? To New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're the best in the world. Yeah, to New Yorkers. We're the best in the world or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna, you know.
So let's light one up.
But he has
New Yorkers. We got the best pizza, and it's cause of the water.
Yeah. I'm walking here. So he gets taken out of the office in a stretcher. Mona chastises Lucky Strike guy and Bert Cooper for making him go to work, and she's like, "Go to hell." Got their asses. All the junior executives are in Pete's office talking shit. Now, Pete has just enough, like, he's kind of a rizless person, but he has just enough whatever people skills to
like
make his
capital,
office.
I think.
Yeah.
Like, he's that, he knows to scheme in this way.
Yeah, which is, like, you know, good enough, good for him. But he's in there and he's just like, he's worried, he's mad, even though everyone is like, listen, if Roger's out, then it means we will probably move up. But yeah, I think he's deathly afraid of having Don have more power because he knows Don doesn't like him. Meanwhile, like, Paul Kinsey is, you know, sitting there wondering, you know, they're all sitting there wondering, does Don like them? But Pete, like, knows Don hates him. So Draper is made partner. Bert takes him over into Roger's office and says, I'm going to make you partner. And Draper says this.
No contract.
Of course you'd say that. Beware the nonconformist. I'm going to introduce you to Miss Ayn Rand. I think she'll salivate.
I love that line because I like... Ugh. I can't tell if he means that he's going to buy him some Ayn Rand books to read or if he's going to actually introduce him to the actual Ayn Rand.
I think he knows Ayn Rand. I think he's, and he's like, I'm going to introduce you. Ayn Rand, famously horny woman. I mean, people are mostly know her as, you know, being like the modern right-wing libertarian goddess of pain and death. But like she, from those I know who have actually read Atlas Shrugged, it's mostly about,
I read it.
Isn't it about fucking for the most part? There's a lot of sex
maybe,
in it from what
I
heard.
I remember a lot of architecture talk.
Yeah,
that sounds boring. Wait, you read Atlas Shrugged, huh?
Yeah.
I can't remember if I read Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead. I read one or possibly both.
Oh, you know
them.
What? I think I read The Fountainhead. Yeah.
Interesting. I have no, I feel like, who has the time, you know?
Like, I mean, this was a long time ago.
I just can't. But yeah.
I also like that they sort of predicted like the affinity between weebs and libertarians.
Yes.
With Bert Cooper.
Yeah, he's got a fucking bonsai tree in his office. Everything Japanese. Everything. Take your shoes off. And he's just like, I really love, you know, like this. Yeah, he loves Ayn Rand. This guy is absolutely in 2024 a like waifu guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, like this is, he's got one of them waifu pillows.
I feel like, I don't know, maybe this was covered in the 50s, but like no one talks about the fact that she named herself Ayn. And people are like, are you saying Anne? No, my name's Ayn. And they're like, okay, sure, what?
All right. Yeah. That's someone who exists to piss you off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's Ayn.
Yeah. What was that tech writer that like gave herself a fake name that started with X?
God, I don't even know.
Idea.
I'm mad thinking about it, Ben.
Yeah, I forget what her name is. But.
But yeah, so you know, Don is now a partner. Pete comes in and presents Hole. He is just like, please be my friend.
Please bend me over your desk. Please let me suck it down.
Yeah, let me put it in my mouth.
Put me in the dirt button.
Holy fuck. That is. Anyways, and Don, you know, is not, he's keeping it cagey because he this is his form of domination. This is how he does it.
He's like, I like to see you weak, and yet it also grosses me out and confirms everything that I thought about you.
Yeah, yeah. It's all disgusting. It's all great. Pete gets drunk, goes into Draper's office just to size it up, and then Draper gets a package. It is Adam Whitman, his half-brother's, you know, suicide package, and Pete steals it. And we don't know.
You can tell he would only do that drunk.
Yeah.
Because, like, stealing, like, taking a package addressed to your boss and, like, opening it, like, how do you even cover that up? Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like steaming open a envelope or something where you sort of, like, fake put it back the way you found it. Like, how's he going to figure, you know, how's he going to cover
this one? And that's a serious offense back then. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a federal offense.
Yeah.
This guy's going to prison.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is interesting that had he not been drunk, he maybe never would have done it. And what comes after that is pretty great. We kind of get, you know, in the next few episodes, I think there's two more left in the season, right? In these 13 episode seasons or 12 episode seasons?
I don't know. I haven't looked. I feel like it must be 12, but maybe 12. I'm wrong.
Oh, is it 12? Okay. Well, that means I think we're going to find out what happens with that. In the next
episode. It's 13.
It's 13, thank God. Okay, because I was like, damn, wait, what happens? Yes. So there's going to be more. We'll see what he does with whatever's in that package. There might be some new information. We might find out. Hey, let's wrap this up with a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something that we missed. Vince, I'll start with you.
I mean, I talked about it. I really liked the Rachel's sister's line. Yeah. And then my least favorite, just looking at Peggy's like fake chubby cheeks for as long as we had to. Where there's like even a ripple on it when she's got like she's on her back. I don't know.
Yeah. Ashley, a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we missed? Any or
you know, all? My favorite, I think I really enjoyed just the little bit we get to see of Peggy at home. I like seeing her argue with her roommate over dumb mm-hmm. roommate stuff. I just mm-hmm. like any of those kind of glimpses as to like who they are outside the office. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I liked all those moments. I loved how we get this goodbye of her being like, time for me to use this vibrator.
Yeah, it's so great. Yeah. That's my favorite too. Just I love I stan a self-reliant queen.
Yeah.
I don't need no Biff. I got my jazz pants on. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, it's the law. You know what? I think I'm giving this a B plus. Vince, what are you giving this episode?
I will give it also a V plus. No, a B plus. Yeah.
Stupid.
Wow.
And Ashley, what would you give this episode? If you had to
I mean, I think this is an A minus foundational episode of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a cornerstone episode, I feel like. It sets you up for the finale you're about to get.
Absolutely. And you know what? If I average all those out, that makes it a solid B plus episode of Mad Men and a solid A plus 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 episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Ashley Ray, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking Mad Men with us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Where can people find you?
At the Ashley Ray everywhere. Go check out my album, Ice Cream Money. And yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much. We will have a link to your album and to your socials in the show notes. Ashley Ray, once again, thank you so much for talking with
us.
Thank
you.
Also, I wanted to compliment you on your piece about the JonBenet Ramsey case, because I watched that documentary and I was like, maybe like all the things that I've thought over the years were wrong. And then I read your piece and I was like, no, I think we had it right.
Yeah, we had it right. Netflix lied to you. The parents paid, the dad now, paid for that documentary. It's all lies. And I got so angry I had to write a whole thing breaking down everything they leave out, because we all know the real answer. If you don't know who did it, I'll tell you who did it. It's in my newsletter.
Yeah, and I should have known better, because I think there's like an entire genre of Netflix era documentaries where like the theme is like, oh yeah, wasn't the media so mean in the 80s and 90s? And it was like, I mean, sure, but like the media are just useful idiots, and they will do like whatever, like whoever has the most highest paid publicist, is they're taking those pitches, and like that was clearly still the case. Yeah. So yeah.
And even the documentary is like, oh yeah, the Ramsey family, they had connections, like they were best friends with the owner of CNN, but they were just a small little family that had no sway over the media. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, and then in the course of that, like I was like looking up things about it, and I realized like, oh, like John Ramsey is the father and his name is John Bennett Ramsey.
Yeah, and then
ergo they named their child JonBenet.
And I was like, and it's, do just, you know, like, how maybe one of those angry that would make an older son who's like the firstborn and like you're not named after your dad, instead your name is Burke. Is. Maybe it makes you angry.
That is weird. Another like weird possibly related tidbit was, I'm reading this book about Donald Trump, and like when he had Don Jr., like he was off somewhere else and he got the phone call from Ivana being like, oh yeah, I named him Donald J. Trump Jr. And Donald Trump was kind of mad and he said, what if he's a loser?
Oh, he was right.
He was right.
Damn.
See?
That sucks.
And maybe JonBenet Ramsey knew, hey, let me go with the other one.
Well, we'll post a link to that piece also in the description. Ashley Ray, thank you so much once again
for
coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out and a prep school name. This is a name that you would get if you went to one of them fancy boy prep schools. And Vince, we have two.
Oh, boy.
Which is a very low number. And, you know, so I want to encourage people to please join the Patreon. Sign up for the $8 tier. Get some names, because we only have two of them this week. Vince, are you ready to give these people names?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are first with, it is May Strebor.
Strebor? That seems rude to call her a Strebor. We're going to call her the Raconteur. Everyone is always just hanging on her every word.
Oh, the Raconteur, now on tour with the White Stripes. Same guy, different sound. Same guy, no girls. You know Jack White?
Uh-huh.
Because he didn't have... Anyways, okay, and our last one, Dorothy Bliff. B-L-E-I-F. Bliff.
Bliff.
Dorothy Bliff.
Oh, man. All I can think is the queefer, and that
Don't do it. We can do better than that, man.
Bleed
Dorothy's
for the queefer?
Worked hard. We don't have enough lady listeners for us to start calling them queef. We can't do it. This person's probably heard that their whole life. You got to, you know. Come on. Prep school
name. We're calling her D.B. Cooper because her initials are D.B., and she's getting away with robbery.
Oh, D.B. Cooper. Where are you? Somewhere. I don't know. Somewhere over the rainbow.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? Yeah, the other white.
Where's the bleef?
Okay. Somewhere over the rainbow, Dorothy. Dorothy, go home. Flying monkeys. All right, that's it. Now, I understand that we're doing a hard sell for these $8 tiers, and we didn't do a great job. But listen, we could do a great job if you just give us a chance. So go to patreon.com/fraudcast, sign up for the $8 tier, and get yourself a shout-out. Also, patreon.com/fraudcast, the $5 tier, doesn't get you a shout-out, but it gets you all of these episodes early, plus you hear our bonus episodes of the Fraudcast. That's us just talking about other things other than Math Men. So do that, and then go to fraudcast@gmail.com for your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you
at all.
I'm a traveling salesman, I'm feeling kind of hot. Let me into your room, and I need to see your bedroom. It's the perfect spot to pound that pussy good. Oh, I've got a hubby-wubby waiting for me, and he's gonna come home. But I guess I'll let you sell me your AC and fill all of my holes. Oh, my sweet Fraulein, we're both feeling hot. Put some blood in my bone. As we walk upstairs, you have second thoughts. Afraid Don Draper's home. Pretty blondie Betty Draper is feeling horny. Cleans up after the kids, so she sits right on top of the washing machine and lets it stroke her shit. Yo, what up, bitch? My name is Ricky Nelson. Flap, 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 oh shit, I'm in jail, son. I went into this girl's house to tell her some AC, and then she tried to call the cops on me. Oh, my sweet Fraulein needs to get digged down. All alone in the burbs, she goes outside with a big-ass gun. Shoots the neighbor's birds. Pretty sucky fucky baby wants a Macy, so she's letting me in. And she makes the mistake of telling Don Draper, and then he's cold to her in bed. What a dick. Oh, I'm a traveling salesman. Yes, I'm a traveling salesman. Oh, I'm a traveling salesman. Yes, I'm gonna fuck your wife and shit. Whoa, I'm gonna fuck your wife, and that's fine.
gonna fuck your wife.